The Matthew Aaron Show is filmed before a live studio audience. No. Calm down. Calm down. Okay, keep going. Keep going. No. It's okay. All right. And welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. Go to Facebook, do that whole thing. You go to the search bar, you type in The Matthew Aaron Show. Yeah, right. And okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm plugging here. And you go to The Matthew Aaron Show and you click like. And what else can you do? Matthew Aaron Show is also now on Stitcher. Absolutely on Stitcher. You can check us out there. You can follow us on Stitcher. It's a radio channel, basically. You have to be accepted to get on the Stitcher, and we were accepted. Caesar slipped them a 20. And he doesn't have 20. I'm just kidding. He slipped them a 5, so maybe. I am going to be playing for you in the next moment. We're going to kick it off with the interview. Earlier today, Leewood Capreas and I interviewed Todd McFarlane. And Todd McFarlane, of course, the creator of Spawn. And he has a new book now out called The Art of Todd McFarlane, funny enough. And it's a must-read. It's about 400 pages. It includes his art and basically a chronological order of everything about his career and everything. And when I come back, it'll be Lee and I doing our thing, talking, chatting, living it up. Lee just joined us, but I'm not really interested in hearing from him at the moment. poor Lee. So let's see. Can I find the Todd McFarlane interview? That's the important thing. Yeah, there it is. So, our studio audience, please sit back, relax. No barfing. No barfing, studio audience. Calm down. And please enjoy this interview with Todd McFarlane. We're very proud of it.
All right. This is Matt. Lee Capreas.
Hello.
I am talking to a legend in the comic book industry and also a legend to me because of his sports love, and that's Todd McFarlane. Todd, it's very, very good to have you on the show. Of course, your new book is The Art of Todd McFarlane, The Devil's in the Details, which is a must-read for anybody that loves comics, drawing, animation. It doesn't matter. It's a great read.
Oh, well, I appreciate you giving me the time and talking about the books. And the interesting thing, and what we hope people will find of use in the book, and besides there's a lot of art in there, going back through my amateur days trying to figure out how to become an artist in the first place all the way to, you know, where I'm at today, is to sort of show the process, warts and all, because when I was younger, the guys who inspired me the most, Matthew, weren't really the great guys, right? It's never Michael Jordan or Wayne Gretzky they impress you, but you never have any hopes that you're going to be as good as them. It's always right. That worst guy on the team. And you sit there and you go, wow, that guy's not very good. Maybe I could take his place. And so, again, right. I'm hoping that people will look at the book and go, wow, that's as good as Todd was when he broke in. And he went on to be, you know, as good as he was years later. Then maybe there's hope for me. And that's really should be, I'm hoping, the bigger message. You don't have to be perfect to get into any business. You just have to be good enough to get that first job. And then it's basically all on your shoulders after that.
So here I was thinking I was the smartest guy in the room and got what Todd's book was about, and Todd just explained it, and I'm not the smartest guy in the room.
Really, no, that's for the aspiring artist, you know, because they should look at page 55 and go, dude, if he could get a job looking like that, I can get a job. That should be the inspiration, not page 350 where I'm now starting to win awards and I've got a million hours under my belt professionally. So, you know, it's the first couple chapters that people should be going, yeah, look at that. That's how that should work.
It's a great lesson to any kind of artist, actor, writer, whoever, because it shows that as long as you have a semblance of talent, you can start out and you can do average to above average work and just get your foot in the door, get some work, and it's like that 10,000 hours makes you good theory. You get better and better and better within time, and that's what's beautiful about this book is it teaches you you don't got to be 100% perfect on your first time out.
Right, and it's funny because, you know, my wife who plays Pictionary from time to time goes, I can never draw, right? You, I mean, you know those people. Maybe you're one of them. I'll never be able to draw. But the theory is, and I subscribe to it, is there's, you know, some very smart people who say that the brain will stop at the skill level that you last basically made an effort to it. So if the last time you made any concentrated effort to be an artist was in grade 6, when you stopped doing any drawing and then you went into algebra after that and you're off into sports or whatever you were doing after that, then the next time you pick up a pencil to draw, and now you're 42 years old and you're playing Pictionary, it goes back in its Rolodex, which is your computer, your brain, and it says, oh, the last time I drew was when I was in grade 6. I was 11. I'm going to draw like an 11-year-old. You don't get better at something just because you're getting old at it, because otherwise we'd all be getting better at golf sitting in our chair, right? So we go, okay. And so it makes perfect sense because I see people drawing like juvenile. And they're adults. I ask them, well, when's the last time you really drew? Oh, when I was in school. And I'm going, okay, well, that's it, because it looks like a 9-year-old drawing. That was the last time you drew.
I just got an email, Todd. I have a question from you from a fan. The first question, well, this is great, because this is totally not related to the book, but I love it, because I'm a sports geek like yourself, and I got some sports questions for you, too. But yep. You invested into the Edmonton Oilers, correct?
Yeah, years ago. I was part of ownership for about 12 years. Yeah.
What made you want to do that? How did you get to that point in your life where you're like, you know, I have some extra dough, and that's a lot of extra dough, I'm assuming, and then you're like, I'm going to become an Oilers owner?
It was a bizarre back way to get there. And again, just so everybody knows, I'm Canadian, so I love my hockey. But I grew up in California, so I never actually ever played hockey, right? Because I was playing all the sun sports down in California. And by the time I moved back to Canada, I was 14, and it was way too late because everybody had been on skates since they were 6. So, but I was a baseball player, ended up playing Pac-10 baseball, so I excelled in another sport. But the way that it worked, and again, you know, I don't know how many sort of NHL fans you have here, but the Winnipeg Jets had moved down to Phoenix, and the Quebec Nordiques had moved down to Colorado, and we only had a handful of teams up in Canada that we thought were sort of our own treasures. And all of a sudden, the owner of the Oilers got in trouble, and as part of his deal, you know, he put up the team as collateral to the bank for his other business, and one of them was his meat packing and some other stuff. And so the bank took over the franchise, and as part of the deal in the bank deal, it said that if anybody from outside of Edmonton comes in and makes an offer to buy the team, but they're going to move the team, and somebody did, the owner for the Houston Rockets, a guy by the name of Les Alexander, who still owns the Houston Rockets of the NBA, came in and said, hey, I want to grab the team and I want to bring them down to Houston, which would have been cool because then they would have been called the Houston Oilers, which would have been interesting.
Yeah.
That it's the moment that Mr. Alexander made the offer, then there was a clause in the bank contract that says the city of Edmonton has 60 days to come up with this fixed number, which I think was $100 million in Canadian funds. And if you can come up within 60 days, we must sell it to you, even if the outside buyer is willing to pay more than that. So I didn't know all that was going on. All I know is that like 2 days before, 3 days before the deadline, one of my family members who happens to live in Edmonton came down to visit me. I'm living in Phoenix, Arizona. And they happened to bring the local newspaper, and I open it up, and bam, there's this article, and I make a quick phone call, and I happen to be the last guy in that just got the last amount of money across the finish line. And we were able to save, you know, the Oilers from being the third Canadian team to sort of go across the border in a short amount of time. So it became sort of a Canadiana thing. You know, the people go, we can't keep bleeding these hockey teams. And so it was more me just going, yeah, we got to save our Canadiana.
You're a Canadian hero. So why not a baseball team, though? Because I know you and I are huge baseball fans. You actually were the guy that bought Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball in auction. By the way, do you regret that?
I only regret that somebody broke the record a few years later. I thought I was golden. I wouldn't have spent that much money if I knew the record was going to be popped a few years later. But it, you know, then again, it forced me to go and get the Bonds record ball. So I had to go pick up, you know, because you never walk into a room, you know, with a bunch of big shots and say, "Hey, I've got the second best of anything," because it begs a very quick question, right? So once Bonds broke the record, then I went out and acquired that ball, and then I also had the Sosa 66 ball. So you know, I've got the top three home run, you know, balls of all time. Now, although I know, you know, there's a cloud of suspicion and people get real emotional about it. I'm not one of those guys. All I know is a hardcore baseball fan. If I go to the record books and I open it up and it says most home runs in a single season, it's Bonds, McGwire, Sosa, I got those three balls. I mean, you can argue all you want. You can talk about asterisks all you want. It doesn't matter to me. It's in the book, right? And we're going to get old. Eventually, we're going to die, and our grandkids are going to go, "I know why Grandpa always got so worked up every time I said steroids." I think there's going to be a bunch of us someday that are going to be in old folks' homes, and we're going to be hunched over in our wheelchair, and then our little great-great-grandkids are going to come, and they're going to go, "Watch this, Jimmy. Watch. Grandpa doesn't move much, but watch this. Steroids, Bonds." And then they're going to see us twitching in our chairs. We go, "I don't know what it means, but every time I say those two words, Grandpa gets crazy about this. I don't know why." So, I've often said, too, that, you know, I think that a guy like Barry Bonds is our modern-day Ty Cobb, that I'm sure that if you go back 100 years and you were there and you met people who knew him, I guess he was a SOB and he did some crazy stuff. But 100 years later, he's kind of cool. You know, he's like that badass that, you know, that just played hard. And I think somewhere along the line, Bonds is going to fall into that category. You know, 100 years from now, they're going to go, "Why is everybody on that guy? Is it because he hit the ball further than everybody else? Like, get off him." You know, he was just doing his job.
It's interesting you bring up Bonds because I was at a party the other night, like right next to his house. He's in Beverly Hills. And I was at a party right next to his house, and people tell these awful stories about Barry. But I'm not from Hollywood, Todd. So I hear these stories, and I go, "Barry's kind of a badass."
I'll give you a Barry Bonds story, you know, because as part of making toys, I have to go and make a contract directly with Barry and his people to make the toys, because he went out of the union, and I had to have the union players, but Barry, as he got close to the home run title, went out. But I, and again, I'm not here to make any excuses or being an apologist for Barry Bonds, but I saw firsthand more than once something that went like this, where Bonds is in the room, and he was always very cordial to me, and then a reporter come in, and he's going to do an interview with the reporter. And then they sit there, and then Bonds sort of says, and his people say, "You know, we're going to do the interview, but just, you know, stay away from, you know, the goofy steroid questions." And the guy goes, yeah, okay. So then they'll start, and Bonds is telling him, you know, Barry's telling them a nice story, and they're having laughs, and they're going, okay. And then, boom, the journalist goes, "Hey, can I ask you a question about the steroids?" And then Barry would touch him on the shoulder and go, "You know, we're not going to go there today." You know, and then they'll talk about some other stuff, some goofy stuff. And then, boom, he comes back with the steroid question, and he goes, I said we're not going to go there. But the journalist just kept coming back to it, even though they'd agreed they wouldn't go there. And by the fifth time, Barry just goes, "God damn it, we said we weren't going to do this. I'm out of here." And boom, that night was the quote that I would read in the article, was that one, where at the very end, after he sort of warned him five times, I thought he was being way more generous than he should have been. And he just finally went, "Obviously, you're just here to basically get a bear trap set on me. And I'm not going to do it." And then when he finally just sort of pushed back a little bit, bam, that was the sound bite that you would get either visually or in a story. And I go, wow. Now, again, so, you know, obviously there were relationships that were there as to why would people want to try and set those traps on him? And maybe it was of his own doing or whatever else. But I saw guys going out of their way trying to get this guy. I mean, they were hunting for this guy, and he became suspicious of anybody that was in the room that he didn't know.
Did you add something there?
Well, no, it's just crazy that they scapegoat players and not the system.
Well, yeah, well, that's part of the thing too. But it's more you sell more papers scapegoating the players.
Yeah. Well, even you remember when they came out with the story about, you know, the whole Balco stuff too, right?
Sure.
I find it somewhat amusing that the newspaper guys for the Chronicle, I believe it was, in San Francisco, had gotten those documents illegally, right? And it was the transcripts or something like that. And so I go, I just want to be clear about the story you're about to write. You're about to write a story about a guy who got something illegal so that it would enhance his career, so that he would be better, so that maybe he actually might make some more money or be more famous. Now, let's just go back to the two reporters. You got this information illegally. You then wrote this story because you thought it would then enhance your career. It would make you famous, and then you could catapult that into more money, and then it would send you on. I want check, 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 check. How are you any different than the other guy? You're just trying to do the best you can within the confines of the game you're playing to enhance your own performance. I get it, and you did something illegal for it. Okay, his was a different matter than yours, but I didn't see much difference between your illegal activities and his illegal activities, other than you got to write about him. He doesn't get to write about you. But go ahead.
Well, speaking of legal, you had a lawsuit with Marvel Man. What's the deal with that?
We ended up resolving that one. You know, again, it took years. You know, we live in America, right? Anybody's allowed to sue anybody over anything. I've found, as a Canadian guy, I found that to be one of the truisms: location, 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 and sue somebody over anything. But we settled that, and Marvel has the. I mean, I hand over all my rights to Marvel in exchange for some other rights, and I don't know. You'd have to ask them what they're planning on doing. I think in the long run, I think they were hoping to tie up all the loose ends of that character so they could come out and do some cool stuff with it.
Yeah, that's great, though. That's good that it got settled. The Art of Todd McFarlane, The Devil's in the Details. Now, what I want to explain to people is, and I guess I should ask you this, you would consider it an autobiography in a way, right?
Yeah, in a weird way, it's an odd book because, you know, it's not an art book, although there's plenty of it. I mean, lots and lots of it. I bought art books, and I think they can be a little presumptuous of just pictures, and there's nothing in it other than pictures. So I'd go in the gallery looking at stuff. So I didn't want to do that. I never liked art books that were just pictures. I didn't want to do a true, quote-unquote, memoir, and I'm not a big fan of reading autobiographies a little bit because there's not enough pictures. And then I also used to buy a lot of tutorial books, you know, how-to books. And so we just sort of took all those three ideas and said, what if we did some art? You know, we did sort of a visual, you know, memoir with some tutorial information. So there are plenty of pages where I'm not saying here's where I was in my career and I'm doing this at this time in my career. But there are pages where I go, this page, here's what I was thinking artistically when I was creating this page and putting it together. And so here's sort of the rules that were going on in my head. And here's some of the things that may be of interest to you if, you know, you're an aspiring artist. So I don't know. It may be a frustrating book to people because they'll go, well, what is it? But we're hoping that people will read it and go, it's just a little bit of all of the above and it has a nice flavor to it.
Well, I'll give people an example. What you do here, which is so great, is each chapter, it kind of shows the evolution of what the chapter's about. So, for instance, there's the spawning of a new era, which is about Spawn. And it shows the evolution of your first drawing of Spawn all the way into a current drawing of Spawn and how you got from that process. You know, it shows you the whole process. It shows you everything that goes into the details and everything to making a character like that. So it's a really interesting book if you're, especially, like you said, if you're a startup or someone that thinks you're good but not great yet or whatever, give this book a look because you'll see how things evolve
how things can.
Well, just to let people know, like the book is well over 400 pages, and what it does is visually it goes in a chronological order. You know, me at 15, 16 years old, you know, when I was literally just trying to, in my infancy of trying to figure out what comic book drawing was, and then going through that process. So that, again, you know, it was trying to learn by copying other people, then trying to learn on my own, then sending off my samples, then getting the first job, then getting better at those jobs, then going to Hulk and Spider-Man, and then eventually from Spider-Man to Spawn, and then from Spawn into some of the, you know, filmmaking or music videos or toys or whatever else. And but, you know, again, sort of saying you can start here and be this simple-minded, and if you basically apply yourself and catch a lot of lucky breaks, which I did, then the end result is way bigger than you could imagine, given that all I wanted to do was pencil comic books, and I got way beyond that, you know. And you know, a lot of it was through hard work. I mean, you know, I sort of kid people. I go, that, you know, that book's only like an inch and a half thick. And I go, but that's 20 years of my life plus to get an inch and a half into a book, right? So, I mean, I guess I'll have
for two inches,
I'll have to look to be 80 now and keep going at it to get 2 inches, right? I mean, if I live as old as Stan Lee, maybe I'll get 3 inches. There's no shortcut, and it, you know, it's one of the things that may disappoint some of your listeners. There's no shortcut to being, you know, I always tell people I'm like a 20-year, you know, overnight sensation. It took me a long time to get where I'm at. There's no short way to get from even like Spawn issue number one to issue number, I'm just writing issue number 227 this week. So there's no fast way to put out 227 comic books.
No. Unless you like hire a whole team, but then you're kind of an auteur in a way. You kind of take control of everything, like in your creativity. So is it hard to hire people to help you animate and help you write?
No, not really. I mean, I find now that my joys come in being in a room with a lot of smart, creative people, and you get to bounce off them, and you're more of a team concept than playing tennis with just you against somebody else. So I spent a lot of years, in a room by myself, hunched over a board doing drawings, being a novelist or a comic book writer, comic book artist. I mean, there's a lot of occupations that are very lonely. You're isolated from the world because you can't do it if you're having a conversation with 20 people. You need to focus on what you're doing. So I put in lots and lots of years by myself, and you know, as I get older, I sort of like, not that I still don't do it, but I like to be in rooms with people collaborating, going, hey, you know, I let me give you a germ of an idea. And let's see if we can springboard from it, because, you know, I never assumed that I was the guy that had all the best answers. So it's nice to be in a place now where I can throw out an idea and it comes rebounding back by the time it ricochets around the room, and it turns out twice or three times better than I would have ever done it if I was just left to my own devices. So, you know, the youth of America is staggeringly good. You know, I mean, I hire them all the time, and I go, wow, man, they are way more advanced at their age level than I ever was. So,
how do you find the youth of America? What's your process for recruiting for Image Comics or anything you do with your toys or whatever? How do you recruit people?
Let me just go on record as saying that I think if you have talent, you will be found if you basically show that talent. You know, I know plenty of people that are talented that just stay in their basements and they never send off any samples and they never go to conventions and they never, you know, go to companies and knock on doors or send off resume. I mean, you have to do all that. You have to be able to get a bit of a thick skin and send it off. But for me, I go to shows, I get stuff in the mail, you know, every now and then on Facebook or Twitter, you know, I'll go, hey, you think you got the goods? Send me a link to your artwork. And you know, I mean, the guy currently doing the Spawn comic book art for me, who's been doing it for the last few years, who lives in Poland, was exactly one of those guys. He sent me his his link from a Twitter feed that I said, hey, you think you're good? Send it to him. And I got about 200 people that day. And I went through it. And, you know, 95% of it, you can quickly see that, you know, it's not up to par. But then every now and then you come across a diamond in the rough, and you come across four or five people that you just go, wow, look at that. I mean, and that, that they haven't got a professional job yet. That's awesome. And so, you know, and that they can live now, you know, in another country where that wasn't doable when I was working in comic books. So, it's inspiring now that you can discover people globally instead of they have to be within the 20-mile radius that you can see their stuff.
Let me ask you this. We got another fan question. One, it's a two-parter. They want to know if you're ever going to re-air the Spawn animated show from HBO. And two, they want to know if there's going to be more Tortured Soul figures.
Yeah, the Tortured Souls was a line, a couple lines of toys I did in collaboration with Clive Barker. You know, he's got a wacky mind, you know, crazy mind. So by the time you got him and me together, I was literally a Molotov cocktail for crazy stuff. So, you know, we've talked about coming back and doing some more just because it was, you know, there's no limitation to it. The biggest downside, unfortunately, is that when we were doing those toys, the world was different in terms of where you could sell stuff. There were a lot of stores that would take that eclectic kind of cool stuff. But sadly, you know, with the sort of economy taking, you know, in the shorts in 2007, 2008, a lot of those cool stores, Suncoast, Virgin Records, Tower Records, you know, Babbage's, all these guys that used to buy all this cool stuff, they disappeared. And there's not, unfortunately, as many places for us to just put out crazy stuff like we used to. As far as the animation goes, you know, the phone rings probably once a month from Hollywood. People want me to bring it back. I worked on a show for about, you know, post-HBO to bring it back for a couple of years, and then we got into a little bit of a legal fight, but I own all those rights. And so everything is done on a 90-minute episode except for getting the frame-by-frame art done. Even all the voice acting is all done, you know, all the drawings, all the background, everything's done up to that one big point where you have to find the studio that will do the frame-by-frame stuff. So what my intent is to get the Spawn – you know, another Spawn movie off the ground that would be a small, you know, real dark, R-rated, supernatural, scary movie.
Got a director for you.
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, you do? Well, the deal I've made in Hollywood is I write, produce, direct it. So
perfect for you.
Right.
That's
the non-negotiable. Because, you know, again, they all come in, they all want to buy it, they want to make it a big blockbuster, you know, big movie. And I can't get my head wrapped around that. So I just go, no, I just want to make it a small, dark, gritty, scary, you know, little movie that you can bring out, you know, every 14 months and just keep rolling them out there. But when that gets off the ground, Then in 10 seconds I'll put the animation right on top of that. So just like what happened before, then there'll be the movie and the animation sort of feeding off each other.
Well, I'll tell you this: you own Image Comics, of course.
I'm a partner in it.
You're a partner, right. Yeah. But by the way, it is it's either my favorite or my second favorite comic book company. I love Image. I love how dark it can be. I love the original storytelling over there. And they just Undying Love's getting made at Warner Brothers, and Joe Carnahan's directing that. Joe is a good pal of mine, and we're doing a project.
Yeah.
But that's going to turn out real well if it gets made. I'm telling you, he's perfect.
Yeah, no, we've had good luck with a lot of the books we put out. You know, we've gotten very eclectic over the years. You know, we started, you know, the band of us that left Marvel that to start it were all superhero guys. But you know, now, you know, fast forward 20 years and, you know, some of our biggest books, you know, obviously our biggest one is Walking Dead that, you know, been around for years and years that just recently, you know, the world woke up to, because of the television show, and that one's sort of kicking butt. But the one thing I keep telling people is that with, Disney buying Marvel and then they're going to keep a tight grip on all their characters. And with Warner Brothers owning DC comic books, which is Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, and they've always kept a tight grip on those characters. Studios like Universal and Paramount and Fox and all these guys, they're going to have to now go to the next wave of characters and books, because Marvel and DC are now off the street, if you will, and which is good for, you know, some of the guys that are doing books at Image and some of the smaller companies, because Hollywood is having to go, hey, we can't get the Marvel and DC characters, so let me see what you've got. And a lot of guys are being able to sell their books, whether, you know, again, they'll get made in the movies, you know, at least they got past the first hurdle of actually having interest in the book, you know, where maybe 5-10 years ago that might not have happened.
Who would make the perfect Spawn as an actor? Do you have anyone in mind?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I've got an actor waiting for my script, an Academy Award winning actor who came out to the office, wanted to pitch me his idea of Spawn, and I sort of pushed back and said, here's sort of my idea I've been living with. It's a small movie. It's tight, and it's designed in such a way that, you know, you don't have to be 22 years old and be super buff and do, you know, jumping over buildings and be very athletic. That's not the story. The
right.
story, you know, is more of a spooky sort of Jacob's Ladder, you know, meets The Ring or something like that. It's a supernatural creep movie, and the only thing supernatural in it is this shadow that moves that we intellectually will know is Spawn, but the rest of the world is normal, right? Which is sort of the movies my kids like and I liked when I was growing up. So it's not, you know, there's not guys in spandex and there's not supervillains. And it's the only way I could keep the budget low and that they would allow me to direct it. So so the actor I think is perfect for it. But more importantly than that, the idea that I have sort of centers around not so much Spawn himself, he's just a catalyst, but those that are in the movie, they're sort of touched by the shadow. So
like the detectives,
you know,
and yeah, like
right.
in the books. Yeah.
Right. So I mean, the example I use to people and Spawn himself never talks in the movie, which I remember one executive, you know, saying like, how's that possible? You're gonna pitch us a movie called Spawn and it doesn't talk, and he didn't talk. And I go, that's an easy one. I go, because there was this small movie I watched when I was younger. It was, I don't know if you ever saw it, it was called Jaws. And I remember the lead character in that thing, that Jaws guy that was the title character, didn't really speak a hell of a lot, right?
That's right.
He was just a catalyst. So the movie of Jaws was really about the people hunting him, and
right.
it was about
right.
their relationship and what it meant. You know, when the shadow moved, that in this case the fin moved, you know, how they reacted. You know, some were zealots, some were a little more moderates and whatever. And so that to me was always more interesting, was, you know, the id of the individual characters. And so the Spawn movie that you know, I've been writing about halfway through is more in that billing. So, you know, when people go, who's going to be your Spawn guy? In a weird way, he's not really as relevant as the sort
right.
of the Spawn hunters, if you will, you know, the Sheriff Brodies and the Richard Dreyfusses of the world. Those are the guys that are going to have a bigger
right.
part in the
right.
actual movie itself.
Well, what went right and what went wrong with the first film?
You know, it was a bunch of us that were first-time filmmakers. So, again, you know, we were all doing our best given the limitations that we had. So I can't say that any of us were Academy Award winners. You know, we were trying to do some things with special effects that, you know, the technology wasn't quite there. And then we tried to, you know, again, because deadlines sort of rush a couple of things. And it was weird because it was a little bit before the curve of a lot of the comic book movies busting out, you know, the FF and X-Men and all the, and then all, you know, there was about half a dozen that all of a sudden got big. Spider-Man came along and just blew everything out of the water. So we were a little bit ahead of the curve, but, you know, again, I thought there was a little boy in there and the dog, and I'm like, what do I care about a boy and a dog, right? I mean, I want to see adult stuff. So, which is why I think the HBO, you know, sort of stuck in people's, you know, minds a little bit more, because we want a mature version of it. And so the one thing that I will always remember is that after the opening weekend, which was a $20 million opening for Spawn, so it was a big opening, was that the head of New Line Cinema said that their exit polling said that 76% of people were 14 or older. And the moment he said that, I went, wow, so if we ever do a sequel, we can go R-rated because in 3 years, bam, all those people are going to be able to get into an R movie, which meant not – I don't want to do an R movie because I want to put a lot of blood and decapitated heads, but it meant that I could then do a sophisticated sort of story, a drama with some supernatural elements into it, and I wouldn't lose the audience because they'd all be old enough to come now.
So Sam and Twitch would be in your new Spawn movie, right?
Yeah, or at least one of them,
At least one of them?
Right.
Who are some actors that you would love to work with? You don't have to commit to anyone or any roles, but obviously as a movie fan, who would you just
I've said, you know, again, because, you know, there is sort of the Twitch character in my mind's eye in the story I'm writing. And to me, it was like, oh, I think DiCaprio would be the guy, right? But my second choice, it may seem like an odd choice, would be Eminem, you know, because
wow.
I remember him from Mile 8, you know, he's that broken guy. I mean, I just think that he would just bring a lot to it, and he just has the look, you know, that guy that just you pick up this character sort of at the bottom of the barrel, and he has to sort of redeem himself as the movie goes through it. So, you know, again, if somebody would say, Todd, you know, who's your number one, who's your number two? And then after that, I'd probably have to go with somebody sexy so the girls would come.
Right, but Sam's a big fat fuck, so who do you go with for Sam? Like that one?
Yeah, you know, again, I've had people say you go with, you know, like John Goodman stuff. I think that's a little too obvious. You know, I think you need more of a like a Galvin, you know, Gandolfini guy, you know, that is a little bit overweight, but you know, not so much that he becomes a caricature of himself. So
I'm going to turn it over to Lee in a second for a few questions, but I just wanted to say about Sam. My favorite thing about the Sam character, and this is what I love about your animation, is he's fat, he's smoking cigarettes all the time, he has the long coat, and then he has that, you see a little bit of his stick all the time, the button that just goes above it, like a fat guy that can't, the shirt's too small, he can't tuck it all the way in. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I've told people, a lot of people try to write him, and I think they get him wrong. They write him as Laurel and Hardy, and that's not who these guys are, right? They're sort of buddies like you two guys. I mean, you have a good time, but the moment a third party walks into a room, and I saw that with Barry Bonds, and I saw it with Gene Simmons, that they act different when it's just the two of us, and as soon as a third person's in a room, bam, they go into this other persona. And that's who Sam and Twitch are, but Twitch is the guy that goes to church and believes in God, but he needs evidence for everything, which seems sort of counter to a guy who then sort of, you know, just throws faith on Sundays, but then he needs, you know, complete evidence, you know, on the other 6 days of the week. And Sam is like the opposite guy. Sam is the guy who then is like, doesn't believe in God, doesn't have any of that, but he completely will go with his gut instincts and doesn't necessarily need the facts that Twitch does, and is willing to basically just go on faith of going, no, I just, that guy just strikes me wrong. And so again, you know, there, it was always sort of the play on who those two characters were. And then the jokes always came, the fun always came, people weren't paying attention, even some of the writers that wrote them, that it only happened when nobody else was looking, like two brothers that would poke fun at each other, but they would never do it in front of anybody else, in front of the public. They would never poke fun at each other. They only did it when the door was closed. So, I mean, it's why I've had a good time with them and why I think, you know, at least one of them should be in the next upcoming movie.
Well, here's Lee, and then I'll come back to you with some final questions.
So you work with Gene Simmons?
Yeah, we did the Kiss toys, and we did the Kiss comic book and stuff like that. So, you know,
the Kiss Army.
I got to hang around with Gene. He's a little bit like Barry Bonds, where, you know, when there's nobody else around, they're great guys, very personable guys. And then, boom, as soon as somebody else walks in, and then all of a sudden they get suspicious of that person. So Gene and I had plenty of conversations about, like, who our favorite Fantastic Four villain was, you know, stupid, geeky stuff. And then somebody walks in the room and Gene, you know, has to go into that king persona of his, you know. And all of a sudden I was a peasant. I instantly became a peasant to him. So, but, I, you know, I go, oh, okay, you know, he has to do his thing. It works for him. He's been doing it for decades. People like it.
He's known for being a pretty sharp businessman. I was interested kind of in the time that it's taken you to get where you are, because you've been in the business so many years. I imagine you've really seen the attitude about comics and graphic novels really change and maybe evolve, and about the profession of being an artist in the medium. I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, let me go all the way back to when I was 16. I literally was a closet collector, which meant, I mean, physically, my comic books were in the closet. You know, you hid them behind doors. I remember my girlfriend, I went to go get a T-shirt, you know, and we were going to go out on a date, and I opened up the closet, and she saw them. And she gasped and went, "Oh, my God, what's that?" And, of course, being very quick on my feet, I said, "Those are my brothers." And you didn't take any claim to them. That girlfriend is, you know, now my wife of almost 30 years, so she ended up warming up to the idea. But I always found it sort of odd that the way that it worked was, you know, comic books when I was younger were looked down as that you were sort of mentally arrested because you were reading comic books and you were a little bit older. But I'd ask people, I go, "Oh, you're going to a movie this weekend?" They go, "Yeah." And I go, "What movie?" "Oh, Star Wars." "Oh, Indiana Jones." "Oh, James Bond." You know, and it was all these movies that to me, they were comic book movies. They just didn't happen to have a comic book to go with them. But I go, what are you talking about? So you can go to your fantasy, and it's okay for you to have yours, and I couldn't have mine. But, all of a sudden, in 88, I believe, you know, Batman comes out and with Michael Keaton, Tim Burton directing, and it sold a lot of tickets. And then all of a sudden, the veil started coming down a little bit, and people were kind of okay with it. And now, fast forward through all the Avengers and FF and Spider-Mans and all of this stuff, Thor, the Captain America, Superman. I mean, you got it's now kind of cool and chic to sort of be a superhero fan. Right. And now we're mainstream. We went from being sort of outcast to being mainstream just because everybody else caught on to the enjoyment factor that we were having, you know, before they said it was okay.
Right. And then, that's interesting though, because you then wind up maybe having maybe the opposite problem, which is you have to fight harder to maintain your edge, because especially when you're making movies, like I'm very glad to hear that you are able to produce and direct your own work and you have control over it and stuff like that, which is very important. Just because, at least with respect to superheroes, now it's like the most commercialized genre in all of movies. And I'm saying, if you want to make something that's a simpler, darker story, that's not a gigantic extravaganza, it's interesting. I think people are going to be kind of interested to see smaller comic book movies.
Yeah, well, I get this question asked all the time. They go, "Todd, what's your favorite comic book movie?" Right? And I go, "Road to Perdition." And so people always sort of hesitate because they think it's got to be a guy in spandex. And there's been plenty of movies that have been out there.
Right.
You know, with Tank Girl and Ghost World and Road to Perdition. that are just good reads of books, but, you know, again, aren't guys with laser guns or laser beams or any of that stuff that are out there. So, I mean, it's one of the things I'm sort of proud about with comic books is that, you know, I tell people, I go, look, at the reason that you have any objection to comic books is because, again, the last time you read a comic book, you were probably 10, and it was either Archie or Superman. Go and do yourself a favor. Walk into a comic book shop. And if you can't find something in that comic book shop, I find it hard to believe. I mean, it's because the content is so wide-ranging now that it doesn't have to be a guy in spandex. It can be a love story. It can be a war story, a Western story, a detective story. I mean, you name it, it's there. You just haven't made the effort, and you have a stereotype for it. If you go to Europe or you go to Japan or some of the Asian countries, I mean, they don't have the stigma about what a comic book is, quote unquote. They understand that it can come in many different forms, just like movies can, right? It's still pictures on a screen, but it can come in either G, PG, PG-13, or R, in some cases, XXX, but it's still just pictures on a screen. Comic books are words and pictures. The story that comes with it is very wide-ranging. If you go into a comic shop.
Absolutely. And I was glad you mentioned, Ghost World happens to be a favorite movie of mine. Tank Girl, you've definitely made me think of my huge crush on Lori Petty. between that and Point Break. It was kind of a big thing. And, yeah, I know what you're saying, because I'm starting to read these things now myself, and I never used to. I just read Charles Burns. I think it's terrific. And that's just a little more bizarre. I just read Black Hole, which is a really good.
Right. Because again, we have to assume, the medium of words and pictures, which is the definition of comic books, is there. And again, the delivery mechanism might change. You might, get more people buying it from downloads than going into comic stores someday. I don't know. But the words and picture combo are never going to go away. And so the question is, are there plenty of us out there that are willing to deliver stories that aren't quote unquote Marvel or DC comic books? Image comic books, I'd say probably 90% now of our books are non-superhero comic books. I mean, it's a huge portion that are not what you think. And because we don't presume that you're gonna be 10 years old, grow up, go buy a Fantastic Four comic book, and then for the rest of your natural life, no matter that you are emotionally and physically are developing as a human being, that you're never gonna want more out of your comic books other than what you got when you're 10 years old. And so I've seen plenty of people, sort of now then go from comic books to, doing stuff like the Vertigo line at DC Comics, which again is a little bit more sophisticated, sort of fantasy stuff, to things like Walking Dead, which is just the human id with the backdrop of the zombie apocalypse. So I'm quite proud of where we're at with comic books and the mark we've made, and that we haven't fallen into we've evolved and we haven't become sort of the dinosaur and are slowly sort of, grown ourselves into extinction.
The Art of Todd McFarlane is on sale now. I got some rapid fires for you here, Todd. And by the way, I got to tell you, I know it's not you. I know it's Image and you're a part of Image, but the Fatale series, Ed Brubaker, fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. No. Yeah, we've got, like I said, a lot of people have come. One of the other things, too, is Image Comics doesn't own any of the books. We are just a publishing house. So anybody's got a great idea, you bring it to us. If we think it's worth printing, we'll print it. And, oh, by the way, you own it. And you do whatever you want with it, good, bad, or indifferent. You can make, puzzles, pajamas out of it, or you can do nothing. So we've got the best deal in the house, and we've had the best deal for 20 years.
What is the most underrated comic book that needs more press from this year, or graphic novel? I have one. Mine is Bluest State, which is Image Comics.
I'll go back in time. I'll give you one of my favorites that I thought was always an underdog. It was a book that Marvel put out that was called The Tomb of Dracula, and it was Marv Wolfman pretty much wrote every issue. Gene Colan penciled every issue, and Tom Palmer inked every issue. And there was such a sense of continuity on this vampire story. And there was no superheroes to be found, although I think one issue they did a weird crossover with Silver Surfer. But it was, I bought and collected over 20,000 comic books when I was younger, and that was my favorite series. If I could be on an island, I could only keep one series. That would be my series, The Tomb of Dracula.
Very interesting. How do you feel about one of my favorite artists, and of course, one of my favorite writers, not artists. But one of my favorite writers is Mark Millar. What's your feelings on Mark Millar's work?
Mark is one of those guys that we're very fortunate comes in with a bit of a slanted look at the world, right? And so I think that from time to time we need guys like that. It was a thing that worked very well for the quote-unquote British invasion when we had like Alan Moore come and Grant Morrison and Neil Gaiman. They came and they looked at Americana through a different lens. And they were able to then take these characters that had fallen, some of them into a status quo and a bit of a rut, and they were able to sort of tilt them and give a story that you went, wow, I never thought of that, right? And so Mark is one of those guys that from time to time can scratch something and you go, look at that guy. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but I always admire the guys that are willing to sort of, be content.
Did you enjoy Nemesis, and could you actually see it being a film? Because we were talking about this on the show last week about how dark and cynical Nemesis is. I mean, that'd be a hard R.
Yeah.
Would that be a great film? Because obviously you want to make a smaller film like that that's dark and gritty.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, but then you have to, you know, again, you have to then contain it, keep the bit low, so that you go, this isn't going to be a giant big blockbuster, but if you keep the budget low, which keeps expectations low, then you can have a good success because nobody has their neck stuck out so far. You make a movie with a $100 million budget, there are a lot of necks stuck out and people get nervous. You make a movie for 10 or 12 million bucks, I mean, it doesn't take much to actually get back to at least breaking even. So the risk factor isn't nearly as big. So I think that those types of comic books need to fall into that kind of a brand, and they'll be successful because nobody's going to get goofy with it.
By the way, I do want to thank my producer, Patrick Tobias, for booking you today. And his uncle works for you, Dave Hughes, and he's the sales president of McFarland Toys.
Dave. What are you talking? Dave was out at Walmart today. He just sent me an email making sure that they keep buying our toys. So you tell him his uncle's still kissing baby for me, doing a good job.
That's great. That's great. Todd, it's the art of Todd McFarlane. Last question before you go, because I've taken up too much of your time. But baseball last year, baseball this year, you probably would have never predicted the Giants to go all the way. Especially with this season, if I told you Lincecum was going to have a 5.5 ERA and 6-7
right.
wins, you would never have guessed it, right?
No. I mean, you sit there and you go, "Wow!" They're arguably their best pitcher had his worst season. Well, it wasn't even arguable. It was his worst season, and they still got there. I mean, so when people sit there and say, "What do the Giants need next season?" I'll tell you what they need. They need Tim Lincecum to pitch like he can, and that would be like getting a free player. Because, I mean, there have been teams before that they have one or two guys that are either injured or have off seasons, and you don't have to trade for anybody. You just need to get them back to their normal production, and it's like getting two free guys because you got one guy's healthy and the other guy's performing like he can, and you got, boom, two guys that are in there. I mean, Cabrera, you know, disappeared on them because of the drug testing, which was too bad because that was a blow to them. And you went, uh-oh, they were already struggling offensively. And when he went down, I mean, I think everybody went, now they're going to completely have to do it with pitching and defense. And Lincecum is still struggling. Can they pull it off? But, you know, Buster Posey then says, okay, I'll pick up the slack and we'll go see what we can do here. And they ended up having
and
it all the
year. And they lost Brian Wilson, too, and they still
right.
I mean, that's a tough season, man. And Panda was like their only power hitter. I mean, they were struggling. So let me ask you this. It's too early to predict anybody for next year because it's just the hot stove right now. It's free agency. But who do you really – what team do you really enjoy watching and what players do you really enjoy watching?
When the guy that I would spend the most money watching, especially when he was younger, was Ichiro. And part of it was because I'm not a very big guy and that was my game. I was a leadoff batter, and he's got a cannon for an arm. He can bunt, you know, steal. Just, I mean, he's electric out there. You know, where the guys like, although I appreciate guys like, you know, Ryan Howard and those kinds of guys. But to me, they're one tool hitters. And if the day you go to the game, they're not using that tool, and they're 0-for-4. They don't really have much more to offer you that day.
Right.
You know, where the guys, you know, that have, you know, the five tools that can hit with power, steal, play defense, and just do stuff. Even if they're 0-for-4, they still make two spectacular plays in the outfield, and they go from first and third on an error. You go, wow, look at these guys. Watching guys that are just electric on the mound that just seem like at times they're toying with major leaguers. I mean, those are phenomenal. I had, you know, this one day where I got to bat against Clemens in some sort of goofy exhibition thing. And he was warming up on the mound, and he started throwing harder. This was afterwards, and he got harder and harder. And I was going, oh, okay, I played back then. I go, I can hit a fastball. So I asked if I could step into the box. I go, I just want to see if I can just stand there. Does Roger mind? And he said, no, get in there, Todd, no big deal. And I was going, yeah, I could, you know, I mean, I'm cocky enough. I go, I could make contact with that and that and that and that. And then he snapped a slider, and I went, wow. You could throw that to me 100 times, and maybe I'd hit 160. I mean, it was the pitch And I played at a high level. It was the pitch that I went divides men from gods. And those guys playing Major League Baseball are just, they're just Greek gods. At any professional level, in any sport, they're just way better than everybody else, even the next tier down. And I go, so he's throwing that slider and Manny Ramirez is going, I'll just hit that opposite field. No big deal. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how good those guys are.
It is. Real quick, lastly, I forgot to ask you this. Why Arizona and not L.A. for your company?
We were up in Canada, and again, we started doing more work down in L.A. We went down, my wife and I, and looked at some houses in the L.A. area, and then, you know, went out to Santa Barbara, made a couple bids in some houses. Didn't quite work out, and then the maid of honor at our wedding, you know, lives in Phoenix, and we'd come down here from time to time, and I went, hey, you know, it's only a 50-minute flight from Phoenix to L.A., so I could easily, when I was doing HBO, I was just commuting, you know, 50 minutes to get, you know, to the airport where guys were coming from the valley that lived in California that were taking an hour and a half. I was beating them to the office, and I was starting in Phoenix. But it was just so that my wife could be by one of her dear friends, and we've been here ever since. And you know, sun shining, you know, we get to play a lot of athletic stuff. I coach a club baseball team, Club Spawn, you know, where we were just recently ranked number one in the state, and we just won our league. So for a new team, we're doing pretty well for ourselves. So, good place to have fun. So
are you an umpire arguer? Do you get thrown out of some games?
Nah, I'm the opposite. I'm like, look, if they get the rule wrong, I'll go have a conversation with them. But if it's a judgment call, you know, they thought that ball that was 4 inches foul was fair. I'm never changing his mind, and so no sense getting crazy. And I don't like my little kids. You know, they're 13. I don't like them to think that they have an excuse to not succeed. So I never like them to think that the umpire is ever part of the reason why they're not doing well.
You just set me straight.
Yeah, right.
Todd McFarlane, you're one of the coolest dudes I've interviewed. You're fantastic. I wish you nothing but the best, man. Thank you for doing the show. I hope you do it again.
Okay, we'll do it. We'll come back, talk a little bit of Spider-Man next time.
Dude, that's great.
Thank you, Todd.
So much, Todd.
You're too kind. Awesome.
Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they just go and go. Ladies and gentlemen, by the way, we are now joined by Lee Caprans. Oh, whoa.
Hello.
Whoa. Oh, wow. All right. He's not that great. He's
Stop
good.
Throwing your hotel keys at me, ladies.
Yeah. He's good. He's not that great. Calm down.
Uh-huh.
You're really good.
Oh.
I don't know if you're standing good. So
they're still going.
They won't
and, they,
stop.
And they managed to silence it and clap less loudly.
They won't. Stop.
Listen,
Tobias goes, what was with the delayed audience reaction? Well, they had to get their cue to applaud.
They were
the
so,
sign wasn't working.
They were so awestruck by the brilliance of that segment.
Yeah, it was a great interview. What did you take away from Todd McFarlane's interview?
Well, I have to say, more people than just comic book fans should listen to that interview because it's very jock friendly.
It is
with all the sports talk.
Jock friendly and it's movie friendly.
Yes.
So I thought it was a positive interview.
I'm looking forward to that Spider-Man talk next time that we were promised.
Spider-Man.
When he said the end.
I know. I felt like once again like my interview with Marcus and Patrick yesterday. I felt once again like Todd would have been fine staying on the phone another hour.
Yeah.
But I just hate doing that to people because I feel like they're fine with it at the moment.
Right.
And then 4 hours later in the day when they're like rushing around to do a ton of shit, they're wishing for one of those hours back.
Right.
They're like, motherfucker. Now I got to go to Ralph's.
Yeah.
I got to go to Target. That's my life. My life is go to seven
they can't all
grocery
be Ron
stores
Zimmerman.
A day. Yeah, right. Where Ron wants more hours.
Yeah, right.
He goes, can we just do another show in 3 hours? I asked Ron to come on today and talk to Todd. He's like, don't know him. And plus, I want to be the big name on the show.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I go, well, Ron, I'm shocked you don't think you are the big name with Todd coming on. You don't think you're the big name, Ron? No, not Ron. He was probably baked. He was. He doesn't know what the fuck's going on. Oh, poor Ron Zimmerman.
I just, living in California, I just assume that everyone walking around is just high all the time. Everyone under 40.
Can I tell you something?
Is high all the time, and most people over 40.
In our new apartment complex, I've not yet smelt weed.
Yeah.
Not one time.
When I move in here, we'll do something about that.
Yeah. But I think no one in this complex smokes weed. If they do, they smoke it in their place. But we lived with somebody who stunk up the whole... By the way, we're in like this luxury complex.
Yeah.
And it reeked of like a street in Compton.
Yeah, it did.
Because of one person.
It did.
Yeah. One person who smoked pew pears and whatever else.
Oh, boy.
Hey, I didn't smoke pew pears.
But I know what you're saying, though. This where our new digs are is I don't smell anything.
No.
Maybe people are blowing it into a dryer sheet and a toilet paper,
the
too.
The first incident we had was last night when I came home late, or 2 nights ago when I came home from the movies with you.
Uh-huh.
And right when I was pulling in, there was this angry, thin black chick on the street throwing glass bottles at some guy's car.
Really?
Yeah, breaking them all over. And I was pulling in at the time, and I was like begging for the garage door to open quicker.
Right.
And then I was begging for the garage door to close quicker. I'm like, oh, hurry up, hurry up. Angry black bitch, hurry up. Yeah, so that was our first incident in the new neighborhood.
Oh, you know what? It just occurred to me. The first part of the interview where Todd's talking about being able to be inspired to succeed, basically because he looked at people and thought, you know what they're doing? I could do better than that. How many people are thinking about that with respect to podcasting, listening to this show?
Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. But we are a great example for Todd McFarlane's theory because we've done 130-something of these. And
really?
We're going to get better and better.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got our foot in the door, being average,
uh-huh.
Or subpar, and now we're going to straight to the spawn. We're going to be working with Stan Lee on podcasting in the near future.
Right. Oh, that was good.
Excuse me.
Oh, man.
We are live.
Okay.
The audience didn't clap for that. No clapping for the big burp. So what else is going on today? We just did a show yesterday. Like, my life's not that exciting, man. Should we give a pilot update?
We could give a pilot update, or we could call somebody.
Oh, or we could call somebody.
We were talking about that.
Yes. But
or,
we should
we
give
talk,
a pilot.
We could talk about a few things.
We should do a pilot update, too, I suppose. I think that'd be a good idea. So here's a pilot update. It's coming right now. Pilot update.
Traffic and weather on the ones. And sports with Mark T. and Greco.
So, pilot update time. I'll make the announcement here on the show. We are shooting January 27th.
Okay.
Flights are booked.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a change of roster. It'll be Joe Carnahan and I producing the show. Mike Binder is doing a film and respectfully had to leave the project. We wish him the best of luck with that. And so it'll be Joe and I, which, by the way, I'm totally cool with.
Yeah.
Because we lost the even-keeled guy. We lost the guy that was going to calm down Joe and I's insanity.
Right.
And really, what's the point of doing a talk show that's going to be different if it's not going to be completely fucking insane?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, I think Joe and I can do some crazy shit together on this.
This update totally did not merit the dun, 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 dun.
Well, we got more.
Okay.
I do want to explain to people what's going on with the pilot. We do have some casting things going on, but here's what I've decided on the casting front. We're going to put out a big press release, blah, 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 tell everyone who's going to be on the show. I don't know. I thought that was a little too Hollywood. So what we're going to do is we're not going to tell you who's going to be on the fucking show. You're just going to have to wait and see.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell you this. We got some good names.
That's
good
be,
names. You know, you're in the inside.
It's going to be good.
Lee's on the inside. He's a journalist. He's our journalist on the Matthew
Aaron
Show.
I'm our far-flung correspondent, our gonzo.
Maybe Joe and I should add a correspondent to the show.
Yeah. And get him like a demeaning... Like,
now let's go outside with Lee Capreas from Scarpetta's in Beverly Hills.
Right. Demeaning...
On the streets with Lee Capreas.
Fedora with a press card in the brim.
What would your street segment be on the Dine and Dash outside from Scarpetta?
I think it would probably...
Can you afford not to eat here, sir?
Yeah, right. Can I borrow a few bars?
Yeah, right.
It would just be me seriously going up to women and being like, hey, I'm kind of drunk. Can you talk to me for a minute, please?
Oh, man. You know, if I ever did get like a late night show, like on network, a late night show, it would last 6 months because I'd hire you.
Yeah.
And you'd be doing like a bunch of comedy segments.
Yeah.
I'd probably hire
canceled.
People like Terzo.
Uh-huh.
You know, it would get really canceled really fast. But
right.
I mean, in a good way. In a good way.
You'd give Terzo like that Howard Beale and Network like kind of rant, like a spot to like rant in.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Give him his own little rantings. Because here's the thing. If I had a talk show, and I'm not talking about Dine and Dash. That's a different beast. But if I had a late night talk show, there would be no monologue ever, ever. It would be new bits every night.
Like Craig Ferguson.
Comedy every night. But Craig's a genius and does 20 minutes of new monologue. See, here's my theory. Craig's so fucking good at the monologue. You can't top Craig, so why try? And even if Craig's the one that leaves and we get a show out of it, why try? You're not going to outdo Craig's monologue ever. So you got to outdo him somewhere else. And you got to outdo him in the bits. Fallon does bits, but I think his bits are a little too pop culture-y and like inside baseball. You can't really like all of Fallon's stuff unless you watch like MTV and 80s TV shows. I mean, that's Jimmy's specialty, and that's why Jimmy does a 5-minute monologue, because Jimmy sucks at stand-up, Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel, I think, is the best balanced of them both. I think he's the best balanced late night guy, period. I think Kimmel's great at what he does. So I would have to do something totally different from Kimmel. So the only thing to do is to do a crazy fucking show with a bunch of, I don't know. I've always seen it as like, wouldn't it be great to do a late night talk show like 70s SNL mixed with talk show?
Yeah.
You can use those celebrities you're having on the show to do some skits, too, and stuff.
Right.
Like, you film them earlier in the day, whatever. Or you don't even have guests all the time. Well, you have guests, but, like, you could have celebrities come in just to film a skit.
Right.
And leave. And then you do some interviews and stuff, but you do cooler interviews. And one thing I'd love to do with the late night talk shows like we're doing with Dine and Dash, not one-on-one with people. Who cares? Bring out all three of those guests at one time and just do 20 minutes, man, 25 minutes. That could be exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Mixing up all these personalities. You got the fucking musician, you got the fucking B-lister, you got the fucking A-lister. Mix it up.
All right, I'll be the guy you're pitching this to.
Yeah,
right.
What do you think, crazy?
I like it. Go. We'll do it in Pittsburgh, Miami, Boise, Idaho, Phoenix. I like Phoenix. We're running with Phoenix. Hold all my calls.
What do you think of the demographic
all right,
here?
Matthew Aaron show. Can he be a girl? Like a big, like everyone on the show is a girl. There's a, you know, you got your cute girl, you got your skanky girl, you got your daring sportsy girl.
That's why I'm casting Lee.
Everyone on the series is, okay.
I'm casting Lee because he brings that feminine.
This Lee character,
look.
What does he bring to the act?
He brings a lot to the act.
Okay.
He brings great hair.
All right.
He brings an almost Jew nose.
Okay. So far, I'm liking this Lee guy. I think he sounds a little light in the loafers, but we're going to have him on anyway.
Right.
All right, good. 5 minutes are almost up. I got to meet with these other people.
Mikey Terzo has great hair.
Terzo, tell me about
great
this
hair.
Terzo.
Great hair.
Okay.
Larger than life.
So hair is going to be a big thing on this show.
He's going to be the Andre the Giant of comedy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let's see. What's hot right now? Could they be like? Could they be talking about social networking and issues of the day?
Yes.
Hot button issues.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what we did with Dine and Dash.
Okay, so
Perfect.
We shoot in Phoenix, and
We shoot in Phoenix. Okay. Yep. And what do you think of our first guest? We were going to go with Tim Meadows.
Tim Meadows.
He does everything.
Okay. Maybe a round table of former Saturday Night Live people.
Yeah, all the ones we could get.
We get the ones we could get.
Victoria Jackson.
We get Joe Piscopo. We get Nora Dunn. We get Tim Kazurinsky.
Yeah.
That's who I want to see.
No, actually, Nora Dunn turned us down.
And I want Garrett Morris
for a
little color.
Isn't Garrett Morris on that Two Broke Girls now, by the way?
Is he?
No.
Oh, man.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm happy he's working.
I was committing to that character until you mentioned that he was on another TV show.
I just thought of it. Okay. But I'm actually happy he's working.
All right.
You know, Garrett Morris?
I know.
I'd rather he be working on the worst show on television and making money than not working. Because I like Garrett Morris.
I do, too. He needs to be around.
So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. That's what we want.
Okay.
Let's see. Caesar's sending me
our
report
update
for the day. Caesar says, today's highlights are angry black bitch and Junos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yesterday was much worse. And by the way, I meant Junos in a good way. Jesus Christ. Oh, come on. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Am I winning people back yet?
Oh, man. Oh, good. Our guidance counselors in high school, I think, should apologize to us on the first show.
I know, they should.
For what happened to us.
Well, you know what's funny is, how do we still get guests to do this show?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't think they listen to it.
I don't either.
Yeah, they don't.
They don't vet it, says Caesar.
No.
Caesar's giving out the secret sauce.
Whoa. Here.
Yes.
It's kind of a self-serving thing. It's because we're getting good guests because they see who the previous guests were, but they don't listen to the show. They just look at the previous guests.
Very interesting. Yeah, but why do we get a ton of repeat guests? Why does everyone want to keep doing the show?
Some people are
minus Mo Collins.
Some people are as sick as we are.
Huh? Oh, they had a good time on the show.
He put it in a more diplomatic way than I did. I said they're as sick as we are.
Some people secretly think we're telling the truth on the show.
I know.
We're bringing the funny truth.
Oh, boy.
We're like the Fox News of comedy.
First of all, we are not doing shit. And you know what? You're even less masculine than Greta Van Susteren.
And by the way, once again, angry black bitch, not racist. I work with black people. I love black people. Jew knows. I'm as chintzy as they come.
If you have to keep explaining these things, it only makes it look worse.
I know.
I told you
that's
on yesterday's show.
That's the comedy in it,
okay.
though. I'm the guy that explains his racism.
You know what's kind of funny? Used to be I was saying these things, and you were like, now Lee is now it's kind of the other
that
way.
That Lee.
You're all roided up. You don't give a fuck about anything.
That's right.
Matt, for our listeners, takes medicine, but in those medicine are steroids.
No, not in the medicine. It's steroids.
Oh, it is steroids.
Yeah,
right.
Straight up.
So he's just this raging ball of energy that you have to just go with, and he talks like Hemingway.
I probably hate on white people way more than anybody else every day anyway.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well,
that's true.
I get it.
I mean, I yell at white people driving down the street every single day.
You people all look the same.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm always telling these round eyes, fuck you. Fucking round eyes. Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Why don't you just pay with your credit card, vanilla skin?
Yeah, right. You fucking honky.
Yeah.
Honky. I hate these fucking honkies,
oh,
man.
Oh, God.
He's fucking honky.
Honky, please.
Oh, fucking crackers everywhere, man.
I like the word honky. What happened to the word honky?
We should just be super racist towards white people on this show.
Right.
We should hate white people on this show.
Yeah.
Like, full time. Honky, cracker. Like, every time we have a white guest on, be like, what's up, honky? Why would I say it like that?
Yeah,
that's how I hate on white people. That's my hate on white people voice. What's up, honky?
What's up, honky?
Have you ever heard it said any other way? Like, what's up, honky?
What is up, honky?
Yeah, right. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
Maybe at Alan Rickman's house.
Yeah, right.
Or F. Murray Abraham.
What is up, honky?
Tobias is filling out his resume as we speak.
Yeah, right. For McDonald's. I will be the fry cook like you never thought you would have.
Oh, that's so funny. Tobias would like us to move on to the next topic, please.
Okay.
We've insulted honkies enough.
All right.
Jesus, Pat.
He's so white.
Yeah, he's so white, man. Get progressive. Get fucking progressive,
okay.
Pat.
All right.
I don't have any more topics. I just had a lot of racism going on today.
Oh,
and back to the pilot. So,
that's our pilot update.
So, we're flying everyone out. I got my Egyptian director.
Okay.
Oh, what a racist! I got my half black cinematographer. Oh, big racist he is. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I got two fat guys.
White supremacist.
Two fat guys. Mm-hmm. So I'm cool with fat fatties.
Uh huh.
No offense, Mikey and Pat. Listen, man. I am a nice guy. People need to get over this shit.
This is like a fucking UN of TV production.
Thank you. My one of my producers, Melanie, Mexican, think. She's brown.
What about, do we have any gays working on the show?
Do we have, Caesar!
Okay.
We got
complete.
Gays?
Yes. All right.
Oh, my dad. So I thought he was going to be listening to the show. My dad never listens to the show, though, so I should have known. Did you get the sticker for your car? Not like, next topic, please.
Which is funny because this is ironically a show that he would probably like the most.
Yeah.
Because this is how dads talk.
Yes, but he'd be bored.
You ever notice that everyone's dad is like a little racist? Like 15?
Everybody's.
Everyone's dad.
Everybody's.
But it's like dads, though. Like people who I never thought would be. It's like the minute they have
kids. Because once they have kids, they have the job that they're not going to lose. And you get them in their house and they just let their free fucking thoughts fly, man.
But there's something about having kids that just makes you not give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
Like something you would never say before you have kids is like, I don't know about this neighborhood. Like, no one without kids says that.
No. Even when we are looking for places to live, we never say that.
No, we didn't.
We're always like, I know about this neighborhood.
Yeah, right.
Don't comes out of that sentence.
You need a couch? There's one in the street.
Yeah, right.
A lot of garages around here, amigo. anyway.
A lot of amigos around garages here.
That's all right. We don't do subtlety on this show today. I try, but get sorry.
I think it's a side effect of the steroids as well, is subtlety is lost.
God, you roided it up.
Right.
I'm so afraid you're just going to beat the shit out of me for no reason.
Could you imagine if Carnahan and I blew up at the same time at this pilot?
Yeah, but first of all,
it would be like a great boxing match.
Carnahan would drop you in one round.
What?
Hands fucking
Carnahan
down.
Carnahan would drop me?
Yes.
How?
Because you're on the wagon and he's not.
Maybe Grillo comes in and takes a cheap one. I don't know about Carnahan dropping me first round, bro.
Oh.
Can I drop Binder first round? Me or Binder?
I'd say...
Me and Roy's Binder.
I don't know.
Don't forget that.
Yeah, I think it would be...
Though I think Binder would do a low blow and like bite my ankle or something.
Yeah.
He'd get cheap.
He might.
He'd get cheap.
Okay.
Don't mean it like that.
Nobody
people.
Could ever
Jesus
fight
Christ.
Every. Oh. I like how we talk about these things like people know exactly who we're talking about. Like some people are actually. We think everyone knows who these people are.
I know, that's sad. We don't. We should take a phone call because we have absolutely nothing for nobody today.
I know.
We have nothing to offer the world today.
And aren't we having fun?
So, who do I call? Who do I call?
Oh, don't affect a southern accent. A plantation owner, please.
Wait, I thought that was a plantation worker.
Oh. Okay, so our first call is going to be...
Oh, man. Can't even make jokes anymore. Too fucking liberal, this fucking world, man.
I know, but
I think it's the reason people hate each other.
It is, yeah. Is Terzo?
It is.
How did I know?
Good for the show, I guess.
Hey, call me back.
Let's just phone
can't
number on here.
Can't count has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 6306773621.
Actually did left the whole one out there.
Jesus.
I hope people start calling Terzo.
No one's going to do that.
Should we call Lenny?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll call Lenny. I love when we do these shows where we go through my Rolodex and no one's around.
And no one answers.
No one answers to show how popular I am.
Well, they're probably out. It's Thursday.
Yes. It is
Thursday is the new Friday.
Oh, yeah. It's Thursday. We do show. other effect of steroids. I don't know what day of the week.
This is Lenny.
Hello.
What?
I'm the Matthew Aaron Show, Kanata.
Oh, what's going on? What fucking area code is this?
I don't know what fucking area code it is. Like, I got the fucking number in front of me.
347.
No, that sounds made up.
Well,
that's what I'm searching. 347 area code. Area code. Oh, it's a New York City area code.
Oh, New York City. Well, I am from New York, Len.
I'm from New York. It's an overlay for Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Staten Island. So it's not the 212 section of Manhattan, but it does cover the Marble Hill and Edmund sections of Manhattan. See, I learned that from Wikipedia. I also donated to Wikipedia yesterday, $20, because I do feel it's an outstanding resource.
We're born in New York.
You sound like you're.
I sound like what?
Water.
So are you there?
Am I here?
Mikey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I got Mikey and.
I'm here. Hello?
Yeah, why are you getting such bad feedback here?
I don't know. Len, you hear that?
Yeah, I hear that too. Is someone listening to this show on the phone? I doubt that's a possibility.
No, I was just in the caller's queue, but I picked up, so.
Oh, you called in?
Yeah, well, they called me, and then I didn't realize who it was, and I figured it out, so that's why I just called in. Apparently, we're on the show right now. How's it going, everybody?
Yeah, so whatever. So, how's it going? What are you up to?
Nothing. I just got done killing a school of shrimp.
Killing what?
I said I just took out an entire family of shrimp.
Oh, where at?
La Isles Marias, Mexican restaurant.
What was it, fried shrimp?
No. I had a shrimp cocktail, and then I had, sautéed, I don't know if it was sautéed, but it was some spicy Diablo sauce. And then I had some shrimp empanadas, and then I had some, I had lots of shrimp. Everything's shrimp here. I don't know, it's a Mexican thing, I guess.
I could go for some shrimp tacos. I was watching something like that on the Food Network.
You know, shrimp tacos, when made properly, are very good. Yeah, I was fairly impressed with this place over here. It was good. I was with the Hungarian. He got some fried red snapper. I tried some of that, too. It was all right.
Oh, the red snapper? Yeah, see, you know what? I'm starting to get on fish now.
If you get the right fish, it's very good.
The halibut we had at Kiefer's.
Oh, man, that was outstanding.
Because mine were the fish tacos. The halibut was good, and I tried some of yours. It was really good halibut.
I got to tell you something. I had a fish at Joe's that night you were going to come. And
yeah.
I forgot what kind I got, but it was unbelievable. It's one of the best fish you've ever had.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I might have been Dover sole. I don't know what it was. I can't remember. I wish I did. But it was very good, very good. Are we still on?
No, I doubt it. I think they cut us off by now.
You're fine.
Oh, yeah, but... Oh, we're still on. Okay.
Well, I haven't talked to Mike in a few days, so...
You know, we're catching up. It's been a few hours.
So...
Mm-hmm. What's going on this weekend? Anything?
You know what? I'm going to bounce around. I got a lot of studying. I got finals coming up. So I go into my fucking, hibernation phase for a bit.
Yeah, well, that's good. Hey, I just got notified I'm flying Virgin. I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I'm a little upset I didn't get the United miles. I'm a little perturbed by that.
Oh, relax. Relax.
You know, here we are financing like a couple of fucking schmoes, and I don't even get the benefits here.
Well, look at it this way. You'll get the benefits when you get your membership to the Soho House.
Oh, you know what? I should make fucking Matt pay for that.
Oh, boy. Well, on the bright side, apparently I'm going to have a... Have you flown Virgin?
Yeah, I flew it from L.A. back to Chicago, but I had a seeing eye dog next to me.
Oh.
And the thing kept farting. It was horrible.
Oh,
and I was on the window, I was gagging, I'm like, never again.
Are the seats nice? I mean, is it nice or is it like any
other?
Yeah,
if it's guys like us. The seats are a lot bigger. I think they're about 19.8 inches. We're on a standard, I think on an Airbus it's 18 inches for coach, and 17 inches on a 737 or maybe a 757. But these are a little bit bigger, yeah.
Well, it definitely makes a difference.
And you could do that in-flight internet, which I'm telling you, they should have rolled out among all the frickin' planes.
It's nice, huh?
You know what? It makes it seem like you're not in the fucking air because you're constantly in connection. It's great.
Well, that's nice.
Well, I'm a proponent of putting the Wi-Fi in the cars, too, because I know they got them in some of the pickup trucks, you know, for the construction guys.
It's not going to be long before you get Wi-Fi fucking everywhere. But you know what? Since we already got it on our phones, I'd be surprised if they don't, you know, tie it in that way somehow.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think through AT&T, if some people have the iPhone, you could turn your phone into a mobile hotspot.
Yeah, I can do that with my phone. I got a program on my phone. I can turn my phone into a hotspot for 4G anywhere.
Oh, really? See, that's the other thing, is why, given in this day and age, is our internet speed so freaking slow in this goddamn country?
Well, from what I understand, we're a little behind, Europe.
We freaking invented the freaking network.
I know, but apparently we got the old lines, I guess. I don't know.
And you know what? Everyone says, oh, the private sector is going to invest. I haven't seen the private sector investing shit.
Well,
and if they're waiting for the government to lay new freaking cable, that ain't happening.
No, no. I think increasing internet speed is the last thing on their minds.
You know what? But I believe in the free flow of information. And the fact, also, the cell phone standards, I guess, in Europe, you could basically use a phone on any network you want out there. Over here, we got to go through a whole unlocking process.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you could screw up your phone anyway. It's fucking asinine over here.
Yeah, we got a different way of going about it. And apparently in Europe, they got a lot of cell phones that are much cooler than we got that we don't even have here.
Yeah, what the shit? We're the number one consumer freaking nation in the world. You should be selling us this shit.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what?
Well, you know why? Because the cool shit don't run on our fucking networks. Because our networks are chopped up between 50 fucking companies.
That's part of it. I'm sure it has something to do with it.
And everyone has a different standard.
It's not going to be long before China's the number one consumer in the world.
Man, they're still a little poor. And we've got them more by the balls, though, than they have us. Because we could just as easily have our products made in Malaysia or wherever the fuck else.
That's true, although we do have a lot of infrastructure in China already.
Yeah, we do.
You know,
a lot of jobs.
Why we don't have
Thank you, Apple.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised you don't have more stuff made in the Philippines.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a U.S. territory. It's
No, it's not a U.S. territory. It hasn't been a U.S. territory in 40, 50 years.
Well,
we did have strong influence there for a lot of years.
Yeah, well, so I think I belong in Puerto Rico. Give me.
Yeah.
I'm saying, you know, you can pay him in cigarettes, you know.
Oh, that's freaking horrible. Oh, speaking of territories, you know, this whole Puerto Rico becoming a state thing, why would they want to? They don't have to pay taxes, and they still get the privilege of being a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, I don't understand why they would. Well, I mean, if they become a state, about the only thing they get is the ability to vote.
What I want to be opened up is Cuba.
Well, you know what? I think that's going to happen.
And not for cigars. But, yeah, it's got to happen. Now, have you seen some of the cars in Cuba?
Yeah, they're from 1955.
Oh, they're outstanding, though.
Yeah,
I'd go down there, I'd buy up 40 of them and bring them up here and do like a 20-year project restoring them all.
Well, you know, you go down to Key. Well, you got to remember, Len, in certain parts of the world, a 1985 Toyota is still a brand new car.
Yeah, true. Well, that's why, yeah, no imports, exports, or whatever.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Trade. Trade barriers, trade tariffs. That's something I've never gotten into, is international trade.
International trade might be interesting. I mean,
I think there's an LLM program, so I could do more school after law school on that.
Well, hey, you want to know something funny? So my boss.
I'm a perpetual fucking student over here.
Oh, that's good. Get some more
degrees. Yeah, so wait, what's funny? What happened now?
What are you talking about?
You were just saying, hey, you want to hear something that's funny?
Oh, so my boss comes up to me today. He goes, you don't wear a watch. I go, yeah, you know. He goes, why don't you wear a watch? I go, because the watch that I want is like $25,000. I'm into gold, and I want a gold watch. And, you know, I'm just, I'm not spending that kind of money right now. And he goes, when's your birthday? I go, February 30. He goes, you need a watch. I'm like, okay. So I already know what's going to happen. I think I'm getting a tungsten Movado. I know which one it is. So I'm happy about that, whatever. It's a nice watch. So this is what I'm planning. So tomorrow when I go into work, I'm going to go up to him and be like, you know, I really should wear some pinky rings. I don't have any pinky rings.
I should wear some pinky rings, too. What, is the tungsten Movado $25 watch?
No. I know what's going to happen. See, he's not going to buy me a watch. He's going to go into his collection of 25 watches that he has, and he's going to take me out one, probably put it in an envelope, write my name on it, and give it to me for my birthday.
So, oh, how nice. The re-gift.
The re-gift. No, but I'm saying he has this tungsten Movado. It's great.
I've never been into watches. I've been into the pinky rings and the other gold. That's why my watches are cheap. And plus, I seem to always bang the shit out of them.
Well, you know, the tungsten's real hard, so I'd be all right with that.
Oh, I mean, if it's durable.
By the way, you know, since you're not allowed to take a gift of $50 or more, you know,
right,
in one 24-hour period, I for your birthday, that's coming up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not an elected official. I think I'm fine.
Oh, you're okay? All right, well, then, Fritchie, this is what we got to do to Fritchie. We should get me, you, and my car, and one other person, and we should all buy Fritchie a gift card for $12.50.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right?
Hello.
There you go. Happy birthday.
That could work. I don't even know when his birthday is.
Apparently, me and you are the show tonight.
Things must be real slow in L.A. In fucking La La Land, where they don't wake up till 10 o'clock in the morning.
Manny gets up at 7 a.m. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, he does. He gets up at 7 a.m. their time. I know. He's been texting me.
Yeah. Oh.
Matt, you there?
Are you there? Hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you, too.
Okay. So, Lena, I assume that your legal schooling is going well. I'd maybe like to get you to
Absolutely, as soon as I wrap it up.
You know, I got an idea, Len. You know what? I got an idea for a show. I was thinking about this. If they ever bring back Fear Factor...
Oh, I hate that shit.
No. Fear Factor, and one of the things in Fear Factor is you have to shave Lee's back.
Oh...
I don't know if anybody's passing that one.
Oh, that is.
Then you gotta.
That could be harsh.
Oh man.
So Matt, what's your show supposed to be tonight?
Ready? I called to check up. And where the fuck are you? You yapping about shrimp tacos?
Yeah, well, they're good.
That's true. So Len, are you ready for this pilot? We were talking about the pilot. That's why I called. Are you ready?
Why am I ready for it? You're the one that has to produce it and make me money.
What you asked for.
What was that?
The work logs that you asked for.
Oh, the work logs. I want to see work logs from everyone supposedly working.
Well, Terzo's in charge of that, so that's your guy.
Terzo, I want to see work logs.
All right.
I want to see expense reports. I swear to God, if I see a family style of Mr. Chow, I'm going to hit the roof.
Oh, you're going to see a lot of expense reports.
A lot of expense reports?
You're going to see a lot of expense reports for lunch, dinner, second dinner, maybe midnight snack. You know, you never know. Sometimes you get crazy eat again. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
Okay. Yeah.
Or as soon as it affects the production value, Matt becomes legally liable.
Well, there you go.
Example of what, Len?
And then frickin' Caesar's going to be pounding those McAllen 15s.
Oh, you mean on that $600 bill that he didn't pay?
Yeah.
I swear to God, everyone else had a tab.
Lenny, did you tell Terzo that you and Caesar talked about the bill?
Oh,
yeah,
no, I did not know about this.
We missed out. Caesar had his own tab as well. Caesar, Scotty, and all them.
Well, they have their own tab. Well, somehow I have a feeling it wasn't $600.
I should have canceled and called Visa.
You know what, Glenn? Maybe this was their idea. They opened up their own tab, and then it was two drinks on your tab, one drink on theirs.
Ah. Is Caesar there, Matt?
Yeah, Caesar's here. Why don't you explain to our listeners, though, what this tab is we're talking about? What happened?
This tab was an exorbitant 572. Apparently, everywhere, well, we pretty much had half the bar under our control.
Yeah.
But somehow, and this is mostly the waitress's fault, if she was asking everyone and their fucking mother to put drinks on it. So hence a $572 tab, to which nobody gave me money until a few days after.
Hmm.
Like I come up from the pisser, and everyone's walking out. I'm like, what the fuck?
You're short like $400 on that tab, Len.
I was short like $400. Yeah, I was short $400. I said I would claim $170 by myself.
Oh, that was nice.
And then Turzo and Carmich stepped in with $100, so I was still short about $3.
Oh.
Paid third, though.
And you are his friend got their own tab.
Well, Matt, it appears that you're going to be financing everyone's booze habits out there for a little bit. I don't have to worry about you because you don't drink, so.
Don't worry about me, but I did spend a good portion of your investment on Celine Dion tickets.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. We're seeing.
Wait, for Vegas, right?
Of course, of course.
So I'm going.
Oh, I just got a ticket?
Oh, you forgot my ticket, then you're sending me to Penn and Teller front row.
Oh.
I don't know. I think I might rather go see Penn and Teller than Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
We're going to Vegas. We're not going, remember?
Oh, we're not going. We're not going. For all purposes of Facebook, we're not going.
Hey, is shrimp an aphrodisiac?
Shrimp isn't an aphrodisiac. Shark is an aphrodisiac, though.
Well, and mussels are an aphrodisiac, too, right? Or oysters?
It's all bullshit.
Well, I'm just asking, you know, because I ate a lot of shrimp, and I'm not feeling that peppy right now, you know what I mean?
Nutmeg.
Yeah. Nutmeg? No
nutmeg's
shit.
An aphrodisiac?
Love nutmeg.
Yeah, you know, my mom tried smoking nutmeg when she was a kid.
Smoking nutmeg?
Apparently you're supposed to trip off of it. I don't know.
No shit.
Yeah,
a common household spice. Look at that.
Yeah. Apparently in large quantities, nutmeg is poisonous.
The what?
In large quantities, nutmeg's poisonous.
No shit.
Yeah.
So
better stay away from that.
Shrimp is an aphrodisiac. Why do you ask? Are you horny right now or what?
That's where I was going after that, Lee. I stood away from that.
Well, you see, that's why I'm asking, because I'm not, and I figured maybe, you know. Well, what are you going to do? Let's cross that one off the list.
Well, guess it's wrong. It's not. Sorry.
Or maybe it's just because I'm with a 6'3" Hungarian and it's not a woman.
By the way, Mikey, what are you going to do? You and Tobias are taking the plane together. Are you guys going to bond?
Probably.
Might have to call.
You know what? I'm going to play a game called Stump the Hut. And
wait, did you put them in, but next to each other in these seats?
No.
Of course.
No, you did, didn't you?
Other what?
Well, you should have put them there so they could lift the armrest.
Oh.
Well, either way, I'm planning on bringing up, like, some Pizza Hut history and quizzing, you know, Pat the entire fly and see how that goes.
Yeah, I could see him knowing part of it, too.
Yeah.
Bring
probably.
Something out.
That's a shame.
Should I get, like, a Pizzone and bring it with me on the plane?
You should.
Oh, and just tempt him with it?
No, guys.
And eat it in front of him?
Yeah.
You're going to be basically maybe Pat down because it's going to be his first time flying. So you might have to deal with that.
This kid's never been on a fucking plane?
No.
No.
Why?
never left the state that I know
of. Wisconsin? Has he left his basement in the last 15 years?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No. We're going to say
he showered in that time, though, right?
Yes.
Hopefully.
Okay.
I don't know why. I have this issue. I whenever I think about Pat, I picture, like, one of the hobbits from Lord of the Rings with Pat's head. I'm, like, expecting him to walk up with no shoes on and his feet are big and hairy. I don't know.
Oh. So is this your show then, Matt?
Well, it was my show.
It was.
We just... Internet.
Where are you doing the show from?
Apartment.
Oh, man.
Oh, from the apartment?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Tobias. Oh, we start our show live from the parlor next week, next Wednesday. The parlor, I guess, is a Chicago kind of joint.
What the hell is the parlor?
The parlor loss.
It's an upscale sports bar that's not going to go out of business anytime soon, I don't think.
The parlor, California.
Oh, by the way, Tobias wants to know if Turzo's been spying on him.
Tell him he's a good sport.
I think he's listening to the show.
I would hope so.
I know it. Peter, do you have
oh, this parlor looks nice. Yeah, I want to go out here when I'm there.
No.
Let me ask you guys a question. Is it wrong that I'm more interested in candy bars when I can't read what's on them?
Why, are they in a different language?
Yeah, these are some serious, like, Eastern Bloc, like, Soviet Union-style candy. I don't even know what the hell this says.
The Mad Hungarian brought them?
Yeah, he bought them from one of his, you know, whatever.
That's why you haven't seen them.
What are these things? What's this one? Is this the chocolate covered honeycomb? Wafers. What about? Oh boy. Well, there goes the blood sugar.
There that goes.
Mhm. All right. So when's Todd McFarlane coming on? Has he been on already?
Todd McFarlane was on about an hour and 45 minutes ago, Mikey. But thanks for asking.
Oh.
How'd that go?
So well.
Great.
It was really good.
And it needed to be.
By the way, Mikey Turzo, working pilot, not listening to the show.
All right.
Very good. What kind of employees I have?
Wait. Seth MacFarlane?
Yeah.
No. The guy that made Toddy guy. The guy that made the Spawn.
Hold on.
There you go.
Matthew Aaron Show.
Did you have any talk about Saigor on the show by chance?
Oh, we didn't, because I didn't have time.
Oh, well, that's
fine. Oh, Todd McFarlane, comic book legend.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Oscars 2013, The Gray.
The website.
Just read the website to us.
I am. Oh, Caesar's done a nice job.
Oh, there you go.
Wow.
I believe you said that.
I didn't say he's worth the $3 a year you pay him, but nice job.
Three.
Oh, you had Eli Roth on a couple weeks ago?
I like him. He's good.
Who's good? Seth MacFarlane? Todd McFarlane.
No. Nucky Thompson's brother.
Who's Nucky Thompson's brother?
That actor?
Go to Boardwalk.
What week was he?
Nucky Thompson.
What are you talking about?
What?
Why, was he on the show?
No.
Oh.
Oh.
I don't.
Oh, you know what? I'm getting confused with Eli Roth because his name's Eli in the show.
Well, no, Eli Roth just opened some joint in Vegas that's supposed to be like a horror thing.
He did. You're correct about that, Len.
Hey.
We're going.
Because when I was out there, I kept fucking seeing the ad at the Cosmo across the street. I was seeing at Planet Hollywood. It was a sick fucking ad. Like, the guy's walking in a barbershop. It's a normal barbershop, and the more he walks in, there starts being blood on the floor and fucking knives everywhere. It looked fucking twisted.
So we're going to go, right, Len?
Absolutely.
Okay. When we don't go to Vegas over the holidays.
When we do not go to Vegas over the holidays.
Oh.
We're not going to Vegas.
People are known to listen to this show, Len, who...
But we are going to San Francisco.
Yeah, but our friends do know we are going to be in Chicago for 2 weeks. We cannot wait.
Yes, we are. We are buying tickets to an event.
Wink. Anyways, Len, are you coming in for the shoot? You're coming.
Yeah, I'm going to try and come in that Saturday and leave Monday.
You want to hang out with the celebs.
I think the $5,000 has bought me that privilege.
I don't know, pal. $5,000, that's a little chintzy.
Well, we got plenty of room for you here in the old apartment. Let's tell you that much.
Well, we got three people sleeping in the living room. We got one person sleeping in my room. I guess someone could thunk with me.
Oh, dear God.
Here's the living room set up. I'll explain to you. It's big enough where this is going to work, but it's still, you know. I'm going to have the poker table, so I'm going to have to move that by the window. But then you're going to have Tobias, Terzo.
Whoa. For someone with no fucking money, why do you have a poker table?
It was a hand-me-down.
It's a necessity.
What are you doing with my money, Matthew?
Free on the expense report.
It'll be on the expense report.
You know, I was playing poker tonight, and I lost my ass.
What, Mikey? Are you underwater again?
What?
Well, hey, Jagups, I got to go study. Then a slice. We'll talk tomorrow.
Well, enjoy your life. We'll figure out where you're sleeping in a month.
Sounds good. Bye.
I think me and Lenny are going to be Thunder Buddies.
No, you're going to be Thunder Buddies with Tobias and Caesar.
What? Well, I think I'm just going to call it like it is in that department and just say that I'm going to be the only Thunder Buddy in that thing.
Some great delivery right there.
That was good.
We're going to have three air mattresses set up in the living room. One's going to be for you, one's going to be for Tobias, one's going to be for Caesar.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
Do you snore, Mikey?
Hopefully.
Oh man, I love it.
Oh, this place is gonna be, we're gonna get thrown out of this complex.
I know, we're gonna have to get another mattress for Lenny too.
I'm gonna literally have to go across the hall and talk to Dave and be like, Dave, I got like,
you know, here, I think that Cap's gonna have a nightcap every night, and my nightcap's gonna consist of a can of refried beans and You know, maybe I'll take what would be good? Maybe I'll do like a little bit of a laxative to try to speed it up, but not enough to where I shit my pants. You know what I mean?
just a couple cups of cafe au lait.
Exactly, you know.
Oh, Tobias, oh, you're in so much... Oh, poor Pat. Oh. First time... This is how traumatized Pat's going to be. First time he's ever left the house. First time he's ever left the state. First time he's ever flown. And how does he spend this first time outside of in the real world?
Yes.
Sleeping next
with me.
Erzo, farting, burping, snoring. Caesar throwing pillows to shut people up.
Gaseous. Bodily fluid.
Oh. I'm just going to throw this out here right now. If anybody hits you with a pillow fight is on like fucking Donkey Kong, my friend. And okay. I don't lose pillow fights.
Those air mattresses are going to have to be replaced nightly. And if I see you and Caesar in your PJs in the middle of a pillow fight, what I'm going to do.
Those air mattresses are going to have to be simonized like tires for winter.
We put chains around them.
Yeah, right.
We Lee, what are you going to do if you come out here seeing those two in their PJs having a pillow fight and Tobias sitting on his air mattress going, stop! Everybody stop!
I think I'm going to have a nightcap in the...
You know, if I'm with... I can just see... I'm going to be having dreams about Mickey Mouse all night.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to be thinking about.
While Pat's sleeping, I'm going to put Mickey Mouse ears on his head and, like, crazy glue him. So when he gets up in the morning, I'm going to be like, what are you looking at, guys? What? What do you see?
Gosh, this is nice.
Gosh. Oh, God.
You know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to have Pat read me bedtime stories while I'm looking the other way. Go back to my childhood.
Oh, that'll be great. You guys are going to have a... Boy, this is going to be a shit show of a pilot.
I know.
I hope Carnahan's not listening to this show.
Yeah.
We just lost another EP.
I know.
Carnahan, no, you know what Carnahan would do? This is how cool he is. He's like, bro, where's my air mattress?
Yeah, right.
Fuck. Where's the air mattress? We're playing poker, and I'm beating the shit out of Caesar and Terzo with bricks in my pillow. Carnahan's pillow had bricks in it.
Right.
Well, that'll be fun, Mike.
That'll be good. I just love that Pat's going to be pretty much like on vacation in a beautiful, one of the most beautiful states in the union, the Garden State, and he's going to be here.
North Hollywood apartment,
right.
205,
right.
Hanging out with Terzo and, oh, Caesar's like, I just gave out our address. Apartment 205. How many apartment 205s are in town?
Yeah. You're just going to, which North Hollywood building we're
You'll
in.
You'll just have to guess which chitty building we're in.
Right.
We're on Magnolia. No, I'm... So, Mikey, are you pumped about this pilot? Are you pumped about the show?
Yeah, I scheduled off work today, by the way, so I'm looking forward to it big time.
Got the plane ticket? You're like, yes!
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you something. I was so happy to see a virgin. I mean, I was really hoping we were going to go that route, and I'm glad you did.
Well, I like to take care of my...
I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to dinner when I get out there and then hang out with my friends, you know, maybe buddy-a-buddy-a-buddy-in with some ba-boom-booms or whatever, you know. It happens, you know, bobbity-boopty. It is what it is. It should be good.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I love how Terzo just said everything he's excited about, not one thing had to do with filming the pilot.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean... Can Joe go out with us? Can we bring him out, or is he, like, on lockdown?
Are you calling out Joe's manhood on the show here? Oh, Carnahan.
No, it's nothing about that. I just respectful of a married man.
I'll ask him to come on out. I'm sure he'll come on out. I'll yank his chain.
One time.
Yeah.
He'll come out.
Yeah, he will never do it again, but he'll come out.
Okay. Well, you know,
have a prep night
I'm just
anyway.
Saying, we just need one of those nights where we own the town. You know what I mean?
We lost Scarpetta's this episode too. We're gonna lose everybody. We're gonna be doing this show from the apartment,
right?
With Eric Estrada,
right?
Yeah, that's gonna be our cast. We're gonna have Eric Estrada and Squiggy.
You know, how do you feel about me sleeping in the nude?
We're out of time. Gosh, look at the time.
I got my own room. What do I care?
Yeah, I got my own room.
I care?
You could strip
down. Then you guys are safe.
Okay.
Yeah, we're safe.
We're safe.
We're safe. It's Caesar and Tobias that got to deal with you sleeping in the nude.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Caesar sleeps in the nude, but there's not much to see.
So you're all going to be nude out here. That's kind of interesting.
Well, it is a California lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, this is just getting worse and worse. Nude, pillow fights, men sleeping next to each other. Oh, God. Where did we end up with this?
San Francisco.
We're the gayest people alive!
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, I guess we'll be accepted in Hollywood now.
Well, yes, you'll be well accepted.
What's next? You're going to be up all night singing show tunes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And watching American Idol.
I'm glad you enjoyed us. You joined us, Mikey. I will be calling you later. I'm glad you did the show. You and Lenny had a great segment together.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
I smoked half a pack while you two were talking.
Yeah.
So I'll call you tomorrow, pal, okay?
All right, buddy. See you later, guys.
That's Mikey and Len.
That's Mikey and Len. If you're new to the show, we used to always do the show with those two characters, and those are real people.
Characters.
Those are real people. They're not made up. They're not actors. They're Matt's actual friends.
Yes.
They really talk like that, and they really bring a lot of flavor to the show.
And Tobias said he objects to Mikey being in the nude unless Pat can be in the nude as well.
So we got three people in the nude sleeping out here, having a pillow fight, feathers flying, and a trip to San Francisco succeeds the whole thing.
Our rooms are the non-gay rooms.
I know.
Oh, no, wait. My assistant's probably going to be
sleeping in my room with me. Really, all the heterosexual action is really going to be in my room.
Until Lenny's over, crashing with you.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then it's going to be like, Lee, I hear you give Kill a back rub.
Yeah, oh, God. I'm going to have to take some woman off the street just to fight the tidal wave going in the opposite direction in this apartment for that weekend.
Well, if you're going to take a woman off the street, can she be a washed-up actress that can also do the pilot?
Who will also do the pilot?
Who played the killer in Selena, the fat Mexican broad?
Did you get her? Yeah, the morning after Lenny and I pull a train in my room.
Oh, that's a Thomas the Magic Railroad.
Link a train, take a dirt road. Anyway.
LeVar Burton's in there with you.
Whoa. Forcing him to wear the glasses. No, you keep those on.
All right. Well, we had a great show tonight. We had Todd McFarlane for a good hour. Todd McFarlane's new book, The Art of Todd McFarlane, is available now. You can get it on Amazon. I'm sure you can get it in comic book stores. You can probably get it in bookstores. It's 400 pages of Todd's art, history, great lessons to be learned from it, and it's a great, great book. I mean, if you cherish art, this is a book to pick up, especially comic book art. It's fantastic. We were joined by Lenny and Mikey Terzo. And what else did we have going on? We're not joined by the NAACP, but we should be next week.
Nor the Anti-Defamation League of Israel any other such Anti-Defamation League of any other nation or
Caesar's
group.
Getting an email from the parlor right now saying,
right.
Hey,
it's just not what we're looking for.
We're closing down the bar for the next ever. And then we'll go by there tomorrow and be like, we thought you guys closed down. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're not here. You don't see us.
Oh.
All right, I want to thank everyone we rip on every day for being good sports.
For being good sports and having fun. And in the interest of the show, I can say I'm spent.
Yes, I'm spent, and we'll talk to you crackers, honkies, whatever you are later.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and have a good night.